Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotaro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm a chef, owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants, including Lola and the Carlisle Room and Dahlia Lounge. And, of course, here where we do our show at the Hot Stove Society, we teach classes here to all sorts of people. Lots of social classes, lots of businesses use us for team building.
Great spot to be here every week, Tom.
Yeah, it's good fun.
And I'm the proud owner of two restaurants in Seattle, Luc in Madison Valley, and Lule downtown Seattle at the corner of 6th and Union.
Very nice.
Bottom of the Sheraton.
And I'm your co-host. I eat at all of your restaurants.
Thank God.
Do you ever pay?
I pay all the time. Now, sometimes your kind co-workers will send out a little treat here and there, which I never turn away. But yes, I'm a paying customer,
well,
Tom.
I'm just curious if you just walk in and say, hey, I'm Katie O. The Seattle Kitchen
Show. No one is ever impressed by that.
No?
I would never even dare. I feel like that would get me bad service if I even
that
tried.
That was one of my favorite moments at Luc one day. Somebody said, do you know who I am? And my wife was answering the phone and she said, no, but do you know who I am?
Good job, Kathy.
We're here with you for 2 hours today. You're always welcome to come join us down here. Go to hotstovesociety.com, buy a ticket, or you could podcast us for free and listen to us, or listen to us in your garden or your car, wherever you're listening to us right this very second.
That's right.
We have a large show coming your way, our favorite shellfish tips and tricks. We're going to host a 4th of July meal using barbecue to cook in every course. We got a little heads up this time. We got a little barbecue heads up.
I know.
Normally, it's a little surprise. We're going to talk delicious frozen treats with Chef Brittany Bartleben just for the 4th of July. And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on food trivia in our second hour. We're going to wrap up the show with that. That is a not-to-be-missed segment. So
that's right.
If you think you can turn off the radio now and come back to us, you got to pay your dues.
If you think we're bad before that, we can look like fools by the time we get to that show.
All right, Katie, take us down the path of ordinary to extraordinary.
Certainly will do. This is where you take ordinary dishes and you make them extraordinary, because that is what you both are known for, is making dishes extraordinary. So the first one being, we're back on our national holidays. Here we go. July 3rd, fried clams. I love fried clams.
Yeah, I haven't had them in a while, but they're delicious.
But I look forward to having them when I do.
Mm-hmm.
What's an extraordinary fried clam?
I think grated lemon confit inside your batter will help give a little perk to your bite every time you go on a bite that clam. It would be something that I would love to do. And I'm a big fan of Gribiche sauce.
Gribiche
being a mayonnaise-based kind of idea where you have egg yolks, mustard, olive oil.
French tartar sauce, basically.
Yeah, French tartar sauce. Hard-boiled egg, grated capers and anchovies grated in there, and the whole thing together, and it's... I think as a base for a fried clam, it's really delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't like a good tartar sauce?
I don't know. I one time had to do a recipe test for someone's gribiche, a chef, who had it in his quantities and didn't pare it down. And I was like, okay, I guess I got to test it as is. And I had like 3 quarts of gribiche in my fridge. And I was like, what could I possibly do with this? Throw most of it out.
Yeah.
All right.
Weekly, there's a garbage truck that comes to your house, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. There were a couple quarts of gribiche in that. All right. Tom, do you have any thoughts on fried clams, or do you want to move on to the next
one?
All right. This is a holiday I feel like works well for you. It's actually July 4th. Barbecued spare ribs. Mm-hmm. Let's first talk about the spare rib itself, and then go into the barbecuing of it.
Well, you know, I had an interesting experience the last few weeks about... A month, 6 weeks ago, I found these kind of heirloom or heritage pork ribs on sale at one of my favorite grocery stores. And I bought them. And you know, the heirloom pork is much fattier, right?
Right.
I ended up not liking it as my spare rib. It was too fatty. It was too rich. And, you know, because of the marbling, it became didn't have as much bite as I like.
Right.
The pork
stays soft.
But it stayed soft. Mm-hmm. It's like you're just kind of... gnawing at the soft meat falling off the bone, even though it wasn't particularly overcooked or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It was, so this last time I thought, I'm just going to buy a normal spare rib. And I literally, they weren't even in the case. They only had the fancy ones in the case. I said, yeah, buy a chance, have. And they went back and got me the regular, much cheaper spare ribs. Not that I was shopping on price that day. But And I did exactly the same thing, smoked paprika, salt, and pepper over the charcoal grill of 4 to 5 hours. Way better.
Yeah.
Way better. They ended up with tons of bite. They got crispier on the outside.
Right.
They stayed plenty moist on the inside. I just really liked it. So it was a counterintuitive kind of lesson learned.
So maybe also when you do the fattier pork ribs, maybe a little searing at the end would be necessary to get that fat to be a little bit crispier.
A little more texture. Is that what you're thinking?
I don't. For me, low and slow smoked ribs is.
I'm with you.
You do.
Yeah.
I would say for me, I would use those ribs more if I want something like a German style or Eastern European braised rib with, say, sauerkraut or cabbage,
where that fat
all kind of comes off into the broth.
Yeah.
And then the meat stays there, and it's just more of that.
That style,
yeah. Right. So that's where I would use that.
It's interesting.
And I love that, too.
Would you par blanch, maybe? Par blanch those?
No.
I just said something really good for
Tom. Oh, my God.
Sacrilege de tabernacle.
There is,
what do you think, I'm at Tony Roma's or something?
There is a faction between people that like fall-off-the-bone meat on ribs and some people that like it a little bit more toothsome, I've noticed.
Right.
So that's, you know.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't like it to be so rich that I can only eat two ribs.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to at least take down a rack.
And these are spare ribs, right? It's not like you can't eat a rack of spare ribs.
Right.
That's a lot of baby bags.
Certainly can. Do we have time for one more? Quickly, Caesar salad?
Well, if you make your dressing from scratch, crushed anchovies, egg yolks, mustard, a little bit of oil, and this beautiful chopped tarragon in there. This tarragon right now is in prime season. Just use that and then use that as your Caesar dressing. That's how I would do it.
I used a whole egg.
Oh, you do?
I like it a little bit. I don't like it
mayonnaise-y. You like
emulsified? I don't want it too emulsified. I like it more mayonnaise-y.
Right, right.
Hmm. The other thing I would say is put your croutons in the salad, then dress your salad.
There you go.
Right.
I love when the croutons soak up a little bit of the dressing.
Exactly.
And use good cheese, darn it. Reggiano Parmesan.
Yellow.
Good cheese. Our pro tips on how to pick, clean, and cook delicious shellfish. I can't even say that word. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Back in the kitchen, the Seattle kitchen at the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Katie, it seems to me there's a couple of areas where people are very uncomfortable in the kitchen. One is cooking fish in their home kitchen.
Right.
Still makes people uncomfortable. Terry, last week, talked about doing king salmon on a cedar plank, you know, simple way to cook fish.
Right.
But people are intimidated by seafood in their home kitchen.
I would.
And half the time, I think it's
agree.
The smell.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what the excuse is when it comes to shellfish, because it doesn't have that smell like fish, like pinfish does.
Well, as someone who just cooked some shrimp the other day and then forgot to take the garbage out that night.
Well, that's a little different.
I have scarred myself, I think.
Yeah.
This is when the ants start showing up. This is when the house smells bad.
This is very, very dire times. But I think there's a couple things going on. I think you're right. I think people are a little bit nervous about the cooking process. But more so, making sure that you're getting good seafood to begin with and not feeling intimidated when you go to your fishmonger or even to your grocery store or wherever you're going to get your fish and feeling comfortable with the product that you're getting, that it's fresh. And, you know, for whatever reason, we're more confident when we buy chicken and steak and pork, and that's certainly an item that can be not as fresh, too.
Right.
But when it comes to fish, we're a little bit more skittish. So.
First thing to do is only buy fish from someone that you would date.
That's right.
Well, then, it sounds like I'm not buying fish from really anyone.
Well, I'm just saying, you need to fall in love with your fishmonger.
Okay, tell
us
more.
Because that's when you're going to get taken care of. When you support them and go to visit them and get to know them and they get to know you, it's like anything, right? It's like the guy, person you buy wine from, is your vegetable producer. You fall in love with the people that fill your dinner table,
but,
and they will do you right.
But just like dating, how do you find a good partner?
Swipe right. Yeah, take that first banana and just push it to your left or right.
Swipe right.
High tides, swipe right.
You know exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so
I'm trying to.
I made my relationship when I first came to Seattle. I made that kind of relationship with Harry Yoshimura down at Mutual Fish, and to this day, 40 years later. you know, starting to buy from his father and now from Harry and now from Harry's son, Kevin. I have a relationship there. And, of course, I'm a little different now because I'm more well-known. But there's many people. When I stand down there in line waiting to buy, there's many people that have been shopping there for years. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to make that effort.
That's right.
And so that's where I would start. And then once you're there, you can trust that you're going to get good fish every time.
Mm-hmm.
I think one time in 40 years I've had something that didn't quite work out. That's a pretty good track record.
Yeah, that's a pretty good track record. And I've been, the same thing with me. I've been with Harry and Kevin for 30 plus years, and it's the same thing. I think to me it's the same thing. One time I was like, hey, something must have happened.
Yeah.
But it was just one time in 30 years. It's
and sometimes it's not even their fault. Let's say you get a halibut that's chalky or a black cod that's been that warm
that's
water
exactly
black
what
cod,
it was,
right?
Yeah.
That the tail just, it's caught in the wrong area, it looks perfectly fine, it smells perfectly fine. But when you cook it, it just melts, and that's a warm water black cod. So you can't even blame them for that, right?
Right.
So anyway, the point is make that relationship. And then I love a place that has live tanks so that when you're doing mussels and clams and lobsters and crabs, that you're getting live seafood because then you know where it's been, how it is. You can feel it. It should be heavy when you pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
A clam, a mussel, a crab should feel heavy to the touch, like kind of what you expect. I would say the same thing about a grapefruit. When you pick up a grapefruit and it feels super light and it's got that big skin and there's just nothing there, right?
Yeah.
But when you feel a different grapefruit with a thinner skin and it feels heavy to the touch, that is a good thing.
Same with watermelon, same with all those different fruits.
That's what I do first. That's how you get good product.
Okay. Let's go on to specific pieces of shellfish. Let's first talk about mussels. Moules frites
is
very,
good. I'm a big fan of moules marinières, which is very classical style of taking the mussel. Mm-hmm. You take the barb out of the mussel,
which is the beard, or barb, what you called it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you remove that, and then you rinse off your mussels in cold water, and then you take them out, let them drain, and then you in a pot you put white wine, chopped shallots, chopped thyme, one leaf of bay leaf, and bring that to a boil. Cook it for about 2 minutes, a drop of garlic in there, and then you put all your mussels in there. And when I say white wine in a pan, it's not like a quart of white wine. I mean, if you have 2 pounds of mussel, you just need one cup of white wine. You don't need more than that. And then you put all your mussels in there. And the secret of cooking mussels properly, because mussels actually cook very fast, is to toss the mussel around while you're cooking them. So shake your pot, make sure the bottom comes to the top, and so on and so forth. The whole time you're cooking with a lid is the best way to do it. It will steam, and it will open very quickly. Within 3-4 minutes, all your mussels are open. Soon as they open, take them out of there. And then finish your sauce with a little cream and a little bit of butter, just because together they go so well. And then bring that down to...
Chef, be truthful. You know it's more than a little bit of butter.
Right. It's more butter than a little bit, but it's not a crazy number. Anyway, bring it up to a boil. Reduce it down a little bit. Pour that with a lot of chopped parsley, fresh chopped parsley at the end. Pour that all over your mussels and serve. And it's delicious. And you take the first mussel, you eat the mussel, and then you keep that shell to be picking the mussels out of all the other mussels. And you stack your shells one into the other. So when you're done, you have this beautiful... Anyway, that's how you eat mussels.
Teach us how to now eat mussels. All right, Tom, we're going to move on to shrimp. There are so many types of shrimp when you go to your fishmonger. Little ones, big ones, the whole nine. Give us a rundown.
Fresh spot prawn.
Jumbos, spot prawns.
Yeah, right now there's spot prawns around. That's what I would get.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a live tank in Chinatown, fresh salt and pepper spot prawns.
Wontong.
But in the grocery stores, there's spot prawns right now.
Mm-hmm.
They go bad super fast. So you really have to smell them or, like I said, trust your fishmonger.
Right.
They will be iodine-y within 2 days, unlike a frozen Gulf of Mexico prawn or something of that nature. I look for the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch prawns because a lot of the stuff coming out that's super cheap that everyone buys is all the stuff that's ruining the shorelines of Thailand and India and Vietnam. And that's what we try to avoid, right?
And possibly don't have the most humane practices.
For the shrimp or the shrimp growers.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
A lot of talk about slavery over there. So... from that perspective, I buy the shrimp. They're typically sold by the size, so you'll see them there like 21.25, 16.20s, and that's how many there are per pound.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, the larger they are, the more expensive they are. and they don't really taste any different. It's just what how you're using them. Shrimp cocktail, I wouldn't go less than 16-20s, right?
Right.
You want a nice big shrimp for
you
that.
You don't want a bay shrimp for shrimp cocktail.
Well, or you want to go all bay shrimp and just do it.
Oh, yeah, then mix it together.
Like a fork, yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Right, exactly.
Anyway,
the
so
celery
that's
situation.
That's what I do about that.
And then in terms of peeling and deveining, do you find that that is a very important step, or are there instances where you keep the shell on and the vein in?
Well, let's be truthful. It's not a vein. It's the poop chute.
It is the poop chute, but
yeah,
we call it a vein.
We call it a vein. That's more... But that is what
but
it is,
turds.
And that's
it's
why that's why you want to take it out because mm-hmm. it's often sandy, right?
Yeah,
they eat through the sand and then they eat sand along with it. So that's what that is. The vein, if you want to see a vein, it's on the underside of the shrimp. Yes, you have to peel. I like to cook them with the peel on when possible because
mm-hmm.
the peel's got a lot of flavor. So I'll butterfly the peel, take the dark vein off the back, and then that's it.
There you go. Do we have time to talk about scallops? Teary.
Sean says
love scallop.
No?
Sean
no.
says no scallop.
How much time do we get?
Oh, man. Well, looks like...
Scallop ceviche, it sounds like.
Dice it, mix it with a little bit of lime juice, and eat it just like there was a drizzle of olive oil and a little bit of sea salt.
Good plan.
Done. Yes.
That was 20 seconds.
Crudo or ceviche, however you want to call that. Yeah, exactly. Sarah has taken a trip to Camino Island. Christofferson Farm, we're going to hear about that when we come back on 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen Show from the Hot Stove Society. Our assistant producer, Sarah Leibovitz, is interested in taking a trip to Camino Island to go to Christofferson Farm. Why is that, Sarah?
That's right. Well, we were invited over. They have a delicious farm-to-table meal that they do at Christofferson Farm, and they invited me to go and check it out. It was an amazing experience. Not only was it a delicious dinner, they also had zip lining.
You know, that's one way to lose your meal.
I'm not doing the dishes. I'm going zip lining.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you
I
go.
Like that. Let's listen in.
I sometimes find myself falling into kind of a boring routine here in Seattle. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love our city. But it's easy to fall into a pattern, to do the same thing day in and day out. To kind of forget what a magical place the Pacific Northwest really is. So, when that happens, I know it's time to take a trip outside of the city. Camano Island is all green fields, little parks and homes surrounded by oceans and trees. It's quintessential Pacific Northwest, compact into a little island just an hour car ride away from the big city. And thankfully, Christofferson Farm is easy to find, what with the directions I'd pulled up involving, like, maybe two turns the entire ride between Seattle and the farm. Perched up on a hill, it kind of reminded me of Little House on the Prairie. There are lavender fields behind it and a giant pumpkin patch that's actually shaped like a pumpkin out front. And if you look up in the trees on the side of the farm, you'll see wires running between them. Zip lines that you can take with a guide that show you the forest. There are signs along the path talking about the native flora and fauna, and how Christofferson Farm works to protect them. And the best way to get a full view of the idyllic-looking farm is definitely from the trees. It makes you feel kind of isolated, like you're alone on this farm on this tiny island, even when you're zipping with a family of four kids. After that, it was time to break out the fancy clothes and head into the barn for dinner.
All right, so if you guys like, follow me.
I was amazed when I learned that the rest of the time, the barn is used as, well, just a barn. It looked so nice, with two large communal tables arranged with flowers, where the guests sit and get to know each other. All of the food served was from local farms and in season. Everything from a green salad with roasted rhubarb and hazelnuts, to salmon with a miso ginger glaze and spring peas, to the dessert of strawberry basil pavlova with a lavender balsamic reduction, was absolutely incredible. And don't worry, I've posted pictures of all of them on our Facebook page, so you can look there and be jealous. Christofferson Farm has been in the same family for generations, and it shows in the care that's gone into maintaining the farm and the land that surrounds it. I sat down with Mona Campbell, one of the siblings that runs the farm, to talk about it.
Hi, my name is Mona Campbell, and I, along with my siblings, manage Christofferson Farm.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history of Christofferson Farm?
Sure. We are so fortunate to be the fifth generation of Christoffersons here at Christofferson Farm. Our great-grandfather came from Sweden, and he bought this property in 1912, and he built an amazing dairy barn in 1914. And it's been the family ever since, and it's been an active farm and timber operation that entire time.
I got the chance to go ziplining here earlier today. When did you start doing ziplining and more activities like that? You know, that's not what you think of when you think of like an old-fashioned country farm.
It's so true. So when my generation started managing the farm, we decided that we're no longer going to lease the property to other farmers, but that we wanted to manage it ourselves. And we were thinking, what kind of business is really sustainable and in line with our mission here at the farm today? And so we came up with our mission, which is Christofferson Farm celebrates family, honors heritage, and respects the land. And so every kind of decision that we make is made with that mission in mind, and we evaluated businesses the same way. So we had been on zip lines ourselves and said, wow, this is so fun and it's amazing. And what about that as a possibility? Because it's very low impact. It exposes people to nature in a way that's fun and can be educational. We have interpretive information on our platforms, and it was a way that we could share this just amazing treasure that we have here with the public, and also share our own learning of, you know, sustainable forestry and organic farming. And so it really fit our mission quite well.
That is a great mission. What else have you done to fit in with that mission here on the farm?
Well, we are certified organic, the farm. So we grow organic hay, apples, pumpkins, and lavender. And we also have undertaken several conservation efforts. We've tried to improve fish passage here because we have Christofferson Creek, which runs right through our property, and it's a salmon-bearing stream here on Kameno. And so there are a lot of efforts all along the stream corridor to improve fish passage, and we've put in a bridge to replace an old culvert, and we have actually a couple bridges, and then we've done some planting to restore the riparian forest that helps shade and shade the stream, provide woody debris, and lowers the stream temperature, all which benefit fish.
We just finished the dinner here at Christofferson Farm, and it was amazing. How did you decide to start doing these kinds of dinners? Is that a new thing?
It is a relatively new thing. You know, with the zip line business, which is a really wonderful experience, we found that people wanted to know more about the history, and they really valued the family enterprise. And we have this beautiful old National Historic Register barn. And we thought, well, you know, we can do more and we can expand the experience. And so it was really great to be able to partner with some winemakers that are regional, some chefs that are on the island, and just create these wonderful community experiences that are, you know, a way that people can appreciate fresh produce that's grown right here on the island and meet new people and, you know, hear a little bit about the wine and where it comes from. And so we thought, well, this will be another way that we can share the farm experience. For this dinner, we were really happy to have Windrose Cellars back. They're a winery out of Sequim, Washington, and we have partnered with them. This is the fourth year, and they have wonderful Italian varietal wines, and they bring what's the latest vintages, and we get to sample usually about 5 wines at the dinner, paired with each course. And Donna King from Kama Beach Cafe here on the island, she does the food and does a beautiful job, and also really highlights all the produce from the island. She uses things from our farm, but also from other local farms on Kamehameha. And so together with Donna and with David and Jennifer from Windrose Cellars, we create the menu kind of, usually it's about 2 weeks before the dinner, because that's at the point at which Donna can really understand what produce is going to be available. And so she can give us an idea of what can be served. And then that combined with, you know, communicating with the winemaker, we create the menu so that it all goes together.
And for this dinner in particular, what was the produce that you wanted to make sure that you used that was in season?
Well, the peas were really amazing. And so that was one thing. They're wonderful hazelnuts locally, which are so special. Some excellent rhubarb, and the local strawberries, which is a Northwest favorite, of course. And, you know, then some wonderful herbs, all the herbs that grow so well in this area.
All right, last question. When are the next couple of dinners coming up, and where can people get tickets? Because this was amazing.
Well, our next dinner is July 14th, but I believe that one is sold out. But then we have August 18th, September 15th, and October 20th. And those are all available on christoffersonfarm.com. You know, our families just felt so privileged to be able to steward this place, and we love it, and we love sharing it. So it's a pleasure to have people out.
Christofferson Farm is a beautiful place, perfect for a summer night away from the city to regain that sense of amazement about the beauty and kindness that really exemplifies the Pacific Northwest. And even if getting back into nature is not your thing, it's worth it just to eat delicious food with great people.
Well, would you go back, Sarah?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
For sure.
And how was the zip line?
As thrilling as I wanted it to be, and thankfully before the meal.
Next up, 4th of July dinner extravaganza on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. It's time for 4th of July supper at Katie O's house.
That's right. We're having a dinner party.
I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Thierry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O, and we are having a dinner party at my place. It is 4th of July. That's coming up. It's right around the bend. And normally we take an ingredient that's a surprise for everyone, but not this time. This time it's just going to be a barbecued dinner all mm-hmm. the way around. And I know that you guys are a fan. I mean, you probably have collectively amongst you 12 grills, Tom owning 11 of them, mm-hmm. Thierry owning
I have
at
a
least.
Nice big Weber, and yeah. I have an egg, and both of those okay. are so awesome.
That's right. So we're going to get them all fired up, every last one of them, and you're going to create a dinner using barbecue in every course, which I know is just going to be such a breeze and a delight for the both of you. And as we like to do, we're going to invite a special guest. Sarah Leibovitz came up with the most American of Americans. Ben Franklin.
Who?
Who?
Who's that guy?
I did not hear.
What? Who's
who?
That?
Quoi?
Ben spent some time in Paris, you know.
Benjamin Franklin, that's what you said?
Oh, oui.
Hello,
oui,
Monsieur
Chef.
Monsieur
oui,
Margot.
A Quaker who's a baker. Ben
there you
Franklin.
Go.
Monsieur Margot.
All right. So, barbecue season. It mm. is upon us. Mm-hmm. A lot of people love to pull out the grill mm-hmm. on the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. First of all, charcoal or gas?
Charcoal.
Charcoal.
Charcoal. Okay.
Both of them.
Both of them. All of them. Who would like to take the first course?
I'm happy to.
Go ahead.
It's up to you, bud.
Go ahead.
Yeah, really? Okay. Fine.
Get it going.
I have no idea what I'm going to make. I think... You know, it's not quite the season, but I'm going to make, I guess it is the season. I'm going to make a cherry margarita to get us started, because I think margaritas are a nice beginning to any sort of barbecue.
Yeah.
So lots of fresh lime juice, blah, 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 blah. But then I'm going to make my own cherry syrup or mm-hmm. just pureed fresh cherries, like you might do a watermelon margarita, same idea, just puree fresh cherries.
I love that when it's nice and fresh and isn't cooked
down
or
exactly.
anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And If you want to take a shortcut, there's a product out there called Tart Smart. It's made from Montmorency cherries, and they use it for anti-inflammation. Mm-hmm. So for like you take a tablespoon.
Did you say Montmorency?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah, I think I did. Anyway, you want to? I think they have some health claims about it, like taking down inflammation by if you take a tablespoon a day or something. But add it to your margarita. It is tart also, so mm-hmm. you might have to add a little sugar to that. So just the cherry margarita.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's going to be a good way to watch the queue go
and
low
maybe
and
some
slow.
Little, maybe something on the barbecue, like maybe some crostini and
no,
or some.
I don't
no.
do crostini.
No. Okay, no crostini.
For a barbecue dinner.
I'm just saying it. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, I'm going to fire up the first course. I'm going to do
maybe
some.
Maybe with crostini?
I'm going to do some crostinis.
It's his barbecue too, don't you know?
Exactly.
No. Some grilled bread, actually, for starter. That would be a delicious idea with a bunch of olive oil, sea salt. And then what am I going to put on that? What do you guys feel like eating? Fresh tomatoes. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Actually, we could actually throw them on the grill, too, if you want. Make sure you put a little olive oil on there. It's going to stick. No, I would put them on a pan, and I would put it in my egg at 650 degrees and put them in the oven for, like, 1.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So they just get that little quick char, and then nice little sea salt on top. Put that on top of the grilled bread. Obviously, some crumbled goat cheese would be delicious with that. Maybe some beautiful fresh basil. And then you have, like, a mini pizza right on top of your... Right, as a starter, it would be a delicious way. I would love to throw in some nice little fillet of anchovies. We've talked about anchovies a couple of times. I'm having like this little, let's make a southern France pizzelle where you can put a little fillet of anchovies right on top.
Mm. Chef, it is the 4th of July, right? The
exactly.
American birthday.
Hey, do you know why we have a 4th of July?
Yeah, because of Lafayette.
Exactly. Merci, monsieur. Uh-huh. I'm glad you remember your story for a minute. Okay, so we can bring some anchovies. Come on.
Lafayette didn't bring anchovies.
No, but the pizza, you know, it's okay. It's a copy.
Or the pizza toast.
Yeah, it's.
All right,
it's
Tom.
A collaboration, Tom.
Or as long as they're going international,
yes,
I'm
going to
go with tacos.
There is no borders. You're right.
On these kind of holidays where you're around all day long, mm-hmm. It's not when I want to do some quick searing, right? I don't want to go out and make burgers, personally. I want my grill started in the morning, going all day, and just kind of tending it.
Yeah, there's a whole case of beer to go through.
Yeah, sipping a little whiskey, doing house chores, you know, watching my dampers, make sure that I'm at the right temp the entire time. So it's a good time to buy a big pork butt, maybe 7 to 10 pound pork butt. I like the bone in. I give it a little rub, or if I want it super tasty, I'll cut it in 3 sections mm-hmm. so that I can rub more parts of it and there's more outside to soak up the smoke. And then at the end of that, it's going to be pulled apart. For the last 45 minutes, I pull it off the grill when it's done, wrap it in foil so it kind of steams on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got my what we often call pulled pork, right? Now,
right.
Pulled pork, typically you take a couple of forks and just kind of shred the meat.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't mind chopping it, rough chopping it. And then I'll either make enchiladas or tacos. I like tacos because making the tortillas is a fun afternoon project.
Mm-hmm. Right,
it's super easy, but it does take time. And then, you know, homemade salsa, guajillo chili salsa, just some cojita,
mm-hmm.
You know, anything like that.
And the barbecue.
You got
on,
the barbecue you can... on. You might as well put onions and tomatillos on the barbecue and make a little tomatillo salsa.
I do like a little roasted jalapeno, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always great.
Ah, it's good. The barbecue is on, so you can throw in your tacos on there. You can throw anything.
I'm not putting my tacos on the barbecue.
No.
My tacos,
not your tacos, your...
Well, my tacos, they have to be on the griddle, right? You're making... The pork is on the barbecue.
Hmm.
I have to break that to you.
You can actually, never mind.
I know you could, but why would you?
Because it's on already. You're using the heat. I mean.
Oh, you're saying you could take your raw tortillas and put them on the barbecue?
Correct.
I don't think so. I don't think that would work so good.
No?
I know you can with bread dough, but I'm not sure about tortillas.
Hmm.
They might get a little brittle.
Yeah, they're a little
very
pasty
tender.
Already. You know, there's not like the bread holds together like
it
a
would dry it
dough.
Up too much.
Anyway, buddy, you have dessert.
Yes.
Huh.
Don't try and get
barbecue
out of it.
Barbecue dessert.
Make
don't
it.
Try and get
make
out
a
of it,
pound
mister.
Cake with, cherries, and I'm going to put in a cast iron pan into my egg again. Cast iron pan burning hot.
Just to say one thing, I've already used cherries in the margarita.
Oh.
So you better pick something else.
I meant to say apricots.
Oh, apricots.
That's what I meant to say.
Okay.
Right? Didn't I say apricots? I'm going to take half apricots. And I'm going to throw them in a cast ironing pan so I can get that beautiful char on the outside of the apricots. And I'm just going to take a pound cake sliced. I'm going to drizzle some nice honey on top of the apricots and put that right on top of my pound cake with a little bit of vanilla, bourbon, whipped cream.
What do you think Benjamin Franklin's going to think about all that?
He's going to go, it wasn't an apricot tree. He's going to go, you know, I need to go with the apple or something. I don't know. No, I think he's going to love it because he's never had.
It was a cherry tree.
Cherry tree, yes. Well, yeah. Apple cherry. You already used the cherry. I couldn't say the word
what
cherry
did Napoleon,
again.
Let's talk about Napoleon for a second.
Yeah, Napoleon.
Or maybe we should let them eat cake.
Oh, that Marie Antoinette.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Exactly.
There we go.
Anyway, pound cake with beautiful charred apricot and whipped cream.
Yeah. And I said Benjamin is going to love that.
He's going to love it.
Yeah. Magnifique. My mother thought that was the funniest thing. My daughter's dating a guy named Benjamin. And I always call him Benjamin. And she says, how did they get the last name Jamin? Isn't that weird? Whatever.
Oh, Mom.
I thought it was kind of funny. agree to disagree or not. Coming up next, please stay with us through the break on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, we are back. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. As you can hear, we have a very live audience. They've all been fed. They've all drunk many cups of coffee, and they're happy to be here. Still up on this two-hour show, we're going to talk 4th of July treats with Chef from the Dolly Bakery, Brittany Bartleben. And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on food trivia, which is what we do, because we like on the 4th of July to take down this KDO.
Wow, is that the new way to celebrate the 4th of July? I thought it was fireworks and barbecue.
Barbecue, margaritas, and beating KDO in tasty trivia.
That's right. Just good old-fashioned competition.
Yep.
I like it.
Smackdown. Okay, agree or disagree. Chef Terry and I are going to listen to your questions, and we are going to give some very astute opinions.
Yes, and you both are pretty spicy today, so I feel like this is going to be a great segment for both of you to agree or disagree on some topics. This list comes from BuzzFeed, our friends over at BuzzFeed. They're such fans of the list, and it's called 16 Time-Saving Cooking Hacks You Should Know By Now.
You know, they should send us a little remuneration for using their name so much on our show.
I don't think they're going to do that.
You know?
They should at least mention the show.
I think they're happy to give us free content is probably what's going on here. But let's see if you agree or disagree that these are things that we should all know by now when it comes to cooking in the kitchen. All right? The first one being, quickly roast garlic in the microwave instead of the oven.
I didn't know you could roast in the microwave. Can you roast in the microwave?
Just combine garlic, olive oil, and water in a bowl and microwave for 7 minutes. All the deliciousness of roasted garlic without the 45-minute cooking time. I guess we could do it. I bet we have some garlic here. It doesn't seem to take very long, 7 minutes, but I just find it hard to believe that it gives the same product.
So I just want to make clear, are we supposed to agree or disagree with you, or do you want Terry
I want you to agree or disagree with the list.
I disagree.
You disagree.
Because I'm a purist somewhere.
You don't
think,
feel like
I think
we should
that the caramelization you get when you roast garlic will not happen in the microwave. Now, I'm not a microwave expert, so I've heard people cooking in microwave, but roasting in microwave for some reason doesn't seem like it would be the same as roasting in an oven. So
I'm going to ask the audience, does anyone have a microwave? Do any of the modern microwaves, do they brown at the same time? Some do?
Oh, wow.
Okay, so maybe you can do it.
You can.
I just think, personally for me, I'm not sure how you're using the garlic, but I have no problem just putting it on the stove in a little bit of olive oil while I'm doing something else. It doesn't need to turn on the oven or anything like that. If you just go low and slow on the stovetop while you're cooking everything else, it's done in 10 minutes. So you've got 7 in the microwave, 10 minutes on stovetop.
45
Get over
in the
it.
Oven.
Yeah, I think you're not in that much of a rush, especially because you're never cooking garlic by itself. So like Tom said, you're cooking something else. So.
All right. Here's another hack that maybe we should know by now. Soften butter in a matter of minutes by placing it under a warm glass. Warm up a glass by filling it with hot water, dump the water out, then place it over a chunk of cold butter. A full stick might be a little too big.
Oh my God.
After a minute
Get
or two.
A life.
Really?
Yes.
Disagree, that sounds like.
Well, I know, I'm sure you can do it, but who cares?
But who cares? Tom's making up his own game.
I think it's a great trick for people who don't know this trick to know that it exists. But, I mean, melting butter, you know, if you... Usually you go to bed at night and you go, hey, tomorrow I'm going to make a pie, I'm going to make some dough, whatever. Take the butter out that night. Leave it on the counter. It'll be ready by the next
Oddly
morning.
Oddly enough, all those recipes call for cold butter.
Yeah, exactly. On top of it.
So. I think maybe for your toast. Maybe you want a little soft butter for your toast in the morning.
Okay.
Here's the next one. Place your sheet pan in the oven as it preheats to make your roasted veggies cook in less time. Do you ever preheat your sheet pans?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't pull it out. It's like the martini glass that you keep in the freezer for a martini. And then you pull it out of the freezer, and then you start making your martini, right?
Right.
And the whole glass goes warm while you're making the martini.
Right.
So if you do that, you have to have your vegetables all tossed in a bowl, ready to go. Pull your sheet pan out, put it on, put it back in, or else...
What's
sheet pan
point?
Cools off in just a minute.
Yeah, that's so, that's kind of their thing. They heat
it's
it fast,
it's cool a principle
quick.
Of warming a hot pan so you can sear or saute something.
Yeah.
All right, here's another one. Microwave mushrooms before sauteing them to cut the cooking time in half.
That's no way.
Let's officially ban BuzzFeed from our radio show.
All right, Sarah, you hear that? It's officially banned.
Okay. These are nonsense.
But you agreed with the sheet pan. We just talked about the sheet pan.
So we're
and you
one
agreed
for four?
That.
Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Okay. No, I think that this is silly. I mean, you're going to take a pan, put it on the fire. If you wait long enough, your pan's going to be perfectly hot. You throw in your cut mushroom into the pan with a little fat first, leftover bacon fat, for example, or just canola oil, something that can resist the heat. And you'll have a perfectly well-sauteed mushroom. Don't touch the mushroom. Don't overcrowd your pan. And it will be fantastic. If you put them in the microwave, all the water is going to pop out. You're going to have...
I did oven-roasted porcini last night. Got so nice and crispy and meaty.
Yeah. Mm.
Super good.
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Okay.
BuzzFeed is back.
Okay. Microplane ginger and garlic instead of mincing it.
Well, it's not... It shouldn't be instead. It should be different usage.
Right.
Because when you grate, it's much finer of a product. Mm-hmm. So ginger cannot cook that long. Otherwise, it gets very bitter. So you want to be careful to put it at the last minute in your product.
All right. The next one. Quickly and easily separate eggs using a water bottle. Just use an empty water bottle to literally suck up the yolks.
I'm cutting this off.
That's it?
Oh, my God. I believe we each have hands. See, our audience, they're holding their hands out. It's like, oh, my
God. I'm trying to understand how that work, actually. What do you mean using a water bottle to break your eggs?
I was going to explain it, but Tom cut me off.
I'm actually curious. What's the use of that? Go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah,
we're leaving
it's
it.
Just use an empty water bottle to literally suck up the yolks without breaking them. I mean, there's 1,000 ways to do this without involving a water bottle.
Oh, my God.
So here's a hack that's a real thing, and this makes a lot of sense. Put your butter, like when you're making pie dough or biscuits, put your butter in the freezer and use your grater to grate the butter instead of your fingertips to make pea-sized things out of it, which warms up the butter and blah, blah, blah. But these things from BuzzFeed, give me a break. These are obviously, Katie, you're looking offended, but you can't like these things.
I'm not offended.
Oh, okay, good.
I didn't
You're looking
this.
Offended because you're wearing a humbug on your head.
I know. I'm just I'm looking at you and just more, you know,
I can't,
waiting to hear
I can't
what
look
you have
at
to say.
You without thinking of putting hot sauce on your head.
Let's all go to dim sum after this.
Up next, questions from our listeners on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. You don't look like a mean person.
No.
What's your name, lovely?
My name's Tammy.
Okay. Hi, Tommy.
Hi there.
Okay. You ready?
Yes.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Chef in the Chapeau is
Terry Rotiro.
Right. I'm Tom Douglas, KDO. The lovely KDO is right next to me. And in case you don't know, her hair's up in a bun. We're going to put it on the Facebook page, and we're going to decide. Everyone can decide what their favorite hot sauce is to put on the humbug on her head.
This is a very bizarre place you're taking this hair, but
it's
very inspirational.
Tina knows how to take a photo of a bun.
She certainly does.
Mm-hmm. What? How do you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. We have questions from you, our fabulous listeners, and we're going to try and answer them the best we can without being rude like I was the last segment, apparently. So,
you're feisty.
Well, come on. Some of those things were ridiculous.
Some of those things were ridiculous. I totally agree with
you. I'm agreeing, too.
Yes. This is our segment where we ask you, our listeners, if you have any questions for us. If you do, in the future, you can go to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, right on our wall. Ask any question that may be on your mind related to food, and we will try to get to it. But right now, we have someone actually that was in our audience, is in our audience, Tammy. Hi, Tammy.
Hi there.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi.
Thanks for being brave enough to come and ask these chefs a question on the mic. What is your question today?
Especially with him being spicy.
Yes, yeah. Right.
My question is with Caesar's dressing and with mayonnaise, they call for raw egg yolk. Mm-hmm. What do we do today with all the health issues mm-hmm. and that to use a raw egg?
Okay. Pretty simple. A lot of the recipes for Caesar salad call for a coddled egg. So you take your egg in the shell, put it in simmering water for about 10, 15 seconds, and that will sterilize the outside. Now, I'm not a scientist. I don't know if it sterilizes it completely. Don't yell at me. But, you know, the idea is there. That's how you kind of, if there's any issues, that's how you kind of figure that out. And then you use the egg that's inside. The inside egg, part of the egg, is not an issue, right? It's the outside of the egg that's the issue. So
the other very important part is to not leave your dressing outside of your refrigerator for hours and days. You know, just think like anything that needs to be refrigerated, it needs to be refrigerated. So keep it, take it out of the refrigerator, use what you need, and then put the jar back in the refrigerator if you've made a bigger batch. You know, it's not something you can leave hanging around in the sun on a picnic table for 3 hours because you will ask for some serious trouble. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes. Right. And the same thing with the mayonnaise?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, frankly, you're going to get me down the mayonnaise path on Caesar salad, which is, it's a bad combo. I think a looser dressing, not emulsified like mayonnaise, is a more traditional Caesar salad dressing.
Yeah, I was thinking of making mayonnaise.
Oh, and making mayonnaise, same thing, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely keep your mayonnaise refrigerated, especially if it's made fresh and, you know, you make it yourself with raw egg yolk. Absolutely. You have to be careful.
Trying to do something without sugar, because so many of the mayonnaise, they add sugar to
them,
too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Isn't that crazy how much sugar we have to consume?
Unnecessarily.
Yes. Thank you, Tammy.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now we're going to go to our Facebook page. The first question comes from Miss Susie Scott. A while ago, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese changed their recipe, and I have been forever affected. I was wondering if you could help me make a better macaroni and cheese than the Kraft macaroni and cheese, which shouldn't be hard, baked or not. I want a go-to dish to replace my old favorite.
Wow. So she loves yellow dye number 4 and can't and misses it desperately.
Listen,
I'm just saying, berate her.
Well,
that's
a lot
the difference,
of people
right?
Like,
that's the only difference, though.
Well, but, you know, I think what's happening with a boxed mac and cheese, as someone who has eaten plenty of it, is that it has kind of more of that queso-like texture, mm-hmm. As opposed to what we're used to with kind of the traditional baked macaroni and cheese, which is made with a roux, and then, you know, you add your cheese, and you've got a mornay, essentially.
Right.
That's a much different cheesy texture than, say, a liquid queso, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of more along the lines of what you get when you have a boxed mac and cheese.
So you're looking at me for an answer. I don't have one.
You don't have one? You don't have a great queso recipe?
I just have a snarky answer, so I'm not going to do it. My mother told me, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all.
To me, the only answer I have is once you get into the way I make macaroni and cheese, mm-hmm. which would use bechamel and grated cheese in it, you're not going to end up with the same thing that you have in the macaroni box.
Right.
That's the problem is if you're trying to replicate that, I'm not sure how you get there.
Well, I would say if you're going to do that, then you just can't bake your mac and cheese, right?
Right.
You
right.
simply have your cheese sauce, you take your hot pasta, you put it into it and serve it.
Right.
Because what's about the Kraft box, right, is that it's just so fast and the macaroni doesn't have mm-hmm. time to soak up all the moisture.
No.
But if you go to bake it, then all that pasta is going to soak up your cheese sauce, and it's mm-hmm. not going to feel the same.
Right.
So just make a big cheese sauce, like Carrie said. Put your hot elbow macaroni in there and serve it fast.
Yes. I would also say, Susie Scott, that I know that there is a great recipe, I want to say, from Kenji Lopez Alt, our friend that has a really great cookbook about the food lab. It's all science-y. And he has a very solid recipe for making a cheese sauce, specifically for mac and cheese. So look that up. The next question comes from Gary Karaoka, and he says, what is the best substitute for anchovies when preparing a vegetarian dish? It says vegetable, but I think he means vegetarian.
Well, if it's just vegetable dish, I would say fish sauce. If it's vegetarian dish, I would say something like brewer's yeast.
Yeast, yes.
Has a good that smoky, umami
yeast.
Kind of quality. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of cheesy, but super savory.
Yeah, I mean, it's anchovies are so delicious.
Or as they say in my
I'm
big
sorry
fat Greek
to hear
wedding,
you can't have them.
I'm a vegetarian. Oh, so you'll have the lamb then.
That's right. All right, we have two more questions. The first one comes from Brad, and he wants to know, we have a huge Kubota fig tree. We harvest close to 100 pounds of figs every year. My favorite way to serve these figs is to cut them into quarters, put a little dollop of goat cheese on them, wrap in prosciutto, stab a toothpick through them, and grill them for a couple minutes. That takes care of 5 to 10 pounds each year. What do you suggest I do with the other 90-plus pounds? I have heard that freezing them and blending them with condensed milk is incredible, but haven't tried it yet. So what does he do with all 90
I mean, you can
pounds?
Start by making some nice jam. I mean, if you have that much fig, that would make a delicious jam.
Mm-hmm.
All you need to do is add a little bit of sugar to it, and I would definitely, or honey, which would actually even better, but I would also put a little dash of vinegar at the end to get that sweet and sour kind of flavor. Not sweet and sour, more like sweet with a little bite of vinegar in the back, and that would make a delicious sweet and sour or savory jam is what
jam.
I mean. Yeah.
I would look up any mango chutney recipe and make a fig chutney instead.
Yeah.
Delicious, great on grilled meats. Probably a little heavy for fish, but that's sort of idea. And then, you know, frankly, I love those dried figs that you buy in the store from Greece and Turkey.
Right. I love those too.
But I've never made them. And I think the ones in the store generally are treated with sulfites so that they don't turn black. But I don't know that. I would look up a recipe for that and try and make my own dried figs.
Yeah.
That is a sweet, literally a sweet snack.
And if you'll keep for a long time.
And if you have 100 pounds of it, you're going to be drying up between here and Christmas.
Well, not only that, but what a great Christmas present. A little box of dried, your own dried figs that have been dipped in chocolate, or a little box of dried figs with a potpourri of herbs in there to kind of scent them up a little bit. Mm. I mean, I just think those are the kind of things that people remember as a Christmas present rather than a vacuum cleaner.
Unless you need a new vacuum cleaner, and then you're like, thank goodness someone else bought it for me.
Just saying. I have six of those.
It becomes a family heirloom recipe. Don't let the recipe box die with you.
That's right.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You got to pass it on and create new ones. Terry and I are doing a benefit for Food Lifeline right here at the Hot Stove Society. I think
we
raised close to $20,000 for Food Lifeline. More like $40,000. That would be awesome. I just wanted to throw that out there. Is that keep an eye out for the things that we do here at the Hot Stove. We do lots of benefits and certainly our regular classes and corporate events. Up next, Chef Brittany Bartleben is with us. She is going to tell us what to make for 4th of July desserts on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Seattle Kitchen Show. We're in the Baker's Corner. Dahlia pastry chef Brittany Bartleben is here to talk about 4th of July desserts and all that they could be.
Yes.
What shall I find for you?
A 4th of July dessert would be nice.
I got it.
Anyway, where do you start on the 4th of July? I mean, sometimes you get caught up in the holiday, or sometimes you get caught up in being too good a baker on the 4th of July, if you know what I mean.
I do. Right.
It's not the time for, I don't think, fancy French buttercreams.
No.
Creams,
nope.
Or
absolutely not.
So what
I should say my birthday is on the 3rd of July.
Okay.
And so this, to me, it's my birthday cake, and it's what I want to make. And I always make a very simple almond pound cake, little bit of almond paste in the cake itself, so you get that lovely marzipan-y flavor. And it's one of those things that's better after it sits around. Fresh strawberries, fresh blueberries, fresh vanilla mascarpone cream, and that is it.
That's it.
So that's what I take to one thing, and then there's always two things I go to. And then we've talked about this on the air before, and I don't care. It's a humiliating, but one of my favorite things to make for a barbecue is poke cake. So
Pup cake.
So let's talk about that.
Poke cake, yeah.
Let's talk about a poke cake.
Yeah.
So, are you feeling embarrassed all of a sudden?
Well, you're embarrassed, and nobody even knows what you're talking about.
Okay, so poke cake is one of those old recipes from the... Well, old. It's a recipe from the 60s. I grew up eating it. I grew up making it every year on my birthday. But you bake a cake, preferably from a box, mm-hmm. lemon supreme. You poke holes in it. You pour Jell-O in those holes, and you let it set, and then
you should
it
be embarrassed
with Dream Whip. I know.
Do you make your own Jell-O, or do you buy the Jell-O?
Heck no, I buy it. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
See, now this is what I knew was going to be great about Brittany, because you're like, now this isn't the time to do fancy desserts.
Well,
and
no.
And what we know about Brittany from her doing these segments in the Baker's Corner is so often she is incredibly skilled. You can make the most delicate, beautiful, intricate dessert. But I know deep down in
her
heart,
there's a place for...
There's a trashy soul.
There's a time and place for my trashy soul.
Yeah.
And 4th of July is it. So that's one thing I always do.
So poke cake. I was thinking tuna in a mold, in a square mold.
Like poke cake.
Poke cake. No, wait. So if you're getting the Lemon Supreme box cake,
yep.
are you then getting lemon Jell-O as well?
No, I'm getting lime Jell-O.
Lime
and
Jell-O.
Then the topping is a combination of lemon pudding and Dream Whip.
Oh my God.
It is, it's just the worst.
You said Dream Whip?
Horrific. Dream Whip.
And is it served?
I'm
going to
bring you
something.
Not even like
cold?
Cold. You can make, you refrigerate it overnight. Well, my mom calls it lemon lime refrigerator sheet cake, so it's, but some people know it.
It's a long name.
It's too wordy for me. So those are my two. I got my fancy, well, not even fancy, but elegant, simple almond pound cake, mm-hmm. fresh fruit, and then my poke cake. This is also a great time. If you're going to a barbecue, you don't want to make something like a cream pie because it's probably going to sit on the picnic table
Correct.
For a while. You want something that can hold.
This is where your box cake is really helpful.
Yes. But it's also, I mean, we've got some really great fruit coming into season.
Uh-huh.
Blueberries are a minute away. Strawberries are going strong. And you kind of want that red, white, and blue to go with your theme. This is a great time of year to maybe bust out some of those bar cookies. Like, I don't know. Have you guys heard of blueberry boy bait? It's one of my favorites.
No, let's hear about it.
Doesn't necessarily work.
Can you say that slowly? Boy
blueberry boy bait, as in I am baiting boys with...
Blueberry.
This is a classic recipe, 1954.
Last week you were swooning over...
I know.
Over like a baker sommeliers.
That must be in heat.
Yes. It is summertime.
It is summertime. This is a really cool recipe. Google it. You'll find 1,000 versions of it. But it is from 1954. Second place winner in the Pillsbury Bake Off was a 15-year-old girl. And this blueberry boy bait was what she made. And it's like a buckle or like a coffee cake. It's chock full of blueberries and has this sort of crispy, sugary lid. At the Dahlia Bakery, we do our own little twist on it with a lavender sugar on top. It's absolutely delicious. People die over it. And it's great with ice cream. It's great just eaten on a picnic. I highly recommend trying
that
recipe.
Yeah, that kind of cake
out.
Is great for
so
when you
great.
Do picnics because it's not going to go bad. It's just, and you can take a lot of heat. You know,
right. Mazurka bars, which is basically like it's an oat streusel that you pack into a pan and then smear with berries or jam or whatever you want and then top with the rest of your crumbly oat streusel and then bake it. It's really simple, but that's
I
another.
I love those things.
They're delicious.
Yeah. But I like them. I like the traditional date ones.
Those are really good, too.
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll eat the fruit ones, too, but those date bars, I can't stop eating.
Yeah, mazurkas are cool.
Yeah, so that's a really great. Bar cookies, I feel like, are great for a barbecue because you can eat a few, come back for them, and... Yeah,
you know what I miss? Cookies is also another one to take to barbecue because it can stay in the sun and not go bad.
There's that raisin cookie that you can still buy today, but they used to be more popular. It's kind of a thin biscuity kind of cookie with raisins in it. It's like a raisin paste in the middle. Reminds me of a mazurka bar.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, those are hard to find these days. Yeah. Let's bring those back.
Yeah,
those
agree.
Are delicious.
Maybe it's time to get rid of your Girl Scout cookie. All that five cases you
if
bought.
If you still have Girl Scout cookies in July, then I admire your strength.
If you bought five cases.
I will just say I bought, we had 5 Girl Scouts in the company this year, and I bought a case of each variety from each girl. So we had a lot more than 5 cases.
I will say the Dahlia office had, I mean, each desk was just surrounded by piles of Girl Scout cookies. They're gone.
Yeah.
Some people's fantasy situation.
Exactly,
Well, we put them out on the host stand, you know, for the customers to have and just to celebrate the Girl Scouts. But it started out as just one of our chefs had a kid.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the word got around the company, yeah. and every kid's in the Girl Scouts, apparently.
Yeah.
Even the boys.
Well, everybody started breeding, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah, there was something in the water at the yeah, Dahlia for a while.
Yeah,
there.
Again. Yeah. Yeah.
The next generation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's
exactly.
right. That's right.
But anyway, so, yeah. So, anything else? What about things that are more traditional? I think of the 4th of July and I think carnival. Is it hard to make cotton candy? You have to have that machine.
You
right?
have to have that machine, but it is not hard.
Not
and
hard.
I remember when I was a kid, I was in like 6th or 7th grade, a friend of mine had that machine and we would just sit on her porch and...
Just eat sugar, yeah, eat sugar for 5 hours.
Just sit and literally eat sugar yeah. for 5 hours.
It might be fun to rent one of those yeah. for your picnic, because
yeah.
I'm sure you could rent them.
Yeah, and I think the machines aren't that expensive either.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think hers was literally a Mickey Mouse cotton candy maker. It's
yeah.
kind of like an easy bake oven, but it worked.
Now,
it's
here's
kinda,
something.
Yeah.
Can I go ahead?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Here's something. You got me sick this week.
Just I did?
Yes, you did.
Oh, my God.
You gave me a little Father's Day present of your fiddle faddle.
My Papa Tom, yeah.
And I had just eaten lunch, and her fiddle faddle is this box of super caramely caramel corn with corn nuts and Landjager slices.
Sounds so good.
And what else was there? Peanuts?
No peanuts, but we did the walnuts, and we did peri-peri rub with love yeah. in the caramel sauce.
I could not stop eating it, and I ate the whole darn thing. I just felt like puking afterwards. But I didn't, and I went
yes,
and got
good.
Another box.
Good. Good for you. That's just, again, that's just sort of... It was something special we did for the dads at Dahlia and
but it's
the bakery.
Kind of a fun afternoon snack,
fun.
Right?
It's at so
a softball
easy
game.
To make. Yeah. yeah it's... I've already
so
given it.
So tell us
few.
How to make that.
So what you're going to do is pop some popcorn.
Okay.
We pop fresh kernels. We don't, but it's super easy.
Not fresh. It's still dried corn.
It's dried corn, but yeah. we don't do
use
the microwave bag.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
fine if you do, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you make a very simple caramel sauce just with brown sugar, white sugar, corn syrup, and butter. Mm-hmm. And you cook that until it caramelizes. And then you add salt, any flavorings you want to do, which I did the rub with love, mm-hmm. peri-peri, which is a great sort of salty, sweet, spicy, and a little baking soda. And that just sort of lightens that caramel, so it's got crispness to it, and it's not going to stick in your teeth so much. And then you pour that mixture over your popcorn and toss with... we use 3 layers of gloved hands so mm-hmm. that we don't burn
So the
ourselves.
Popcorn has to be hot still?
No, the popcorn you can do in okay. advance, but the All caramel right. needs to be hot. And then you just add in, as it's still sort of tacky, whatever you want. And we went with Landjager sausage, which I had deep fried to pull out a little bit of the moisture.
You did not.
I did.
Oh
Maybe that's
God.
Why you were sick.
It was super thinly sliced.
Thinly sliced, deep fried. If you don't fry it, in any of that excess moisture in
oh
the sausage makes the caramel corn sort of soft. It gets,
I
yeah.
mean, yeah, you're yeah. right. You have
it's
totally,
the worst thing.
You're totally right in the
Chef
world.
Chef Brock Johnson of the Dahlia Lounge, when he first tried it, said, I just want to sit there in my underwear and eat it.
It was addicting. I couldn't stop.
It's trash, but it's so good.
But it sounds so good because
yeah.
it's all the things that people
and
love.
You,
a little bit
yeah.
of sweet. I know the
sweet,
peri peri
salty,
has
salty.
A little bit of that
yeah.
spiciness
yeah.
to it. And then you have that like meaty deliciousness, that savory
yeah.
bit of Landjager in
and
there.
And a nice beer. Drink yeah. it with some beer or oh. eat it with some beer. It's delicious.
Do you have any of this left over? Do I need to go?
It disappeared
no!
on Sunday night.
I knew it.
You should sell it by the bag at the Dahlia Bakery.
You should, yeah.
When you take your caramel, just give me a temperature.
I believe it was 289.
289.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
A, and
it's
is that,
almost,
like, is that yeah. considered a hard...
Hard crack,
hard
yeah. This
crack.
Is sort of a different caramel because there are other things in it besides just sugar.
Yeah, plus you're putting baking soda.
Baking soda in it. Yeah, it's, yeah. yeah.
That's
so
what
do you,
keeps
do you
it soft.
Put the baking soda in the beginning or do you stir
end.
It in?
I stir it
end.
In at the end, yeah. yeah.
And that keeps it soft. That stops it from...
It keeps it light and crispy.
Yeah, light and
yeah,
crispy.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
You do the same thing with peanut brittle.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a caramel corn, a commercial caramel corn in the marketplace that you would buy?
No.
I haven't really found
no.
one.
No, mm-mm.
And this is somebody who used Jell-O and so
yes,
we know...
Yes, that's
if she
saying
says
a
no,
lot. I am not going to shy away
no,
from store, but yeah, yeah.
we have an expert here, so yeah. if she says no...
Coming up next, our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. Are you going to stay and play
I'm going to stay. It's been a while.
Yes,
yeah.
it has. On Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia, where Tom Douglas wins and everyone else loses.
We'll see.
Once in a while.
That's a confidence
right.
there.
Once in
I
a
love
while.
That. Once in a while.
Doesn't happen very much lately. All right. Brittany Bartleben, the pastry chef from the Dahlia Bakery, is staying with us.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a bit feisty in this game. She's very competitive. And Thierry Rotero, the chef in the chapeau, is going to play. I'm going to play. And Katie is going to be the administrator
that
today.
That is correct. Today we are playing for Brad. He's one of our listeners. He had a great question about the 100-pound worth of figs he has growing in his backyard and what to do with those. So that's who we're playing for. How the game works, Brittany, you know this. You're each going to get 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct is the winner. And whoever gets the least amount correct is the loser and has to give something to our listener, Brad. Tom, feeling very confident, I know, going into this. But if you lose, what would you like to give Brad?
I'm going to give Brad a fiddle faddle making party with Brittany Bartolabi and a $50 gift card.
Goodness.
Because I'm going to go to the bakery and I'm going to go with Brad and we're going to learn how to make fiddle faddle together.
Wow, that's awesome. Fun.
And then
wow.
Finish with a $50 gift card in the bakery.
All right.
And I'm going to give Brad, I think, a brunch for two at Luke. Since brunch I couldn't sell it last week, I'm going to try selling it this week.
Okay. And Brittany?
I'm going to do lunch for two at the Dahlia Lounge.
Mm.
And
wow.
Some delicious pastries for dessert from the Dahlia Bakery there.
That sounds fantastic.
You know, I've owned the Dahlia Lounge for 29 years. Mm-hmm. It has never been in a better spot with Chef Brock and yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Doing desserts. Yeah. And
we're a good team.
Yeah, it's really in a good space right now.
Well, I'm sold. Maybe I'll go there for lunch today. All right, Terry, you love to go first. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Where is barbecue made with a vinegar-based sauce? Is it North Carolina, Memphis, Tennessee, or St. Louis, Missouri?
I'm going to go with North Carolina.
That is correct. Very nice. In the Valais of Switzerland, they hold a half round of local cheese near the fire. As it melts, it's scraped onto a plate, and it's called what?
Raclette.
Oui, delicious. Third question, true or false? Marco Polo introduced pasta and noodles to Italy from China. Is that true or false?
I would say yes.
You say it's true?
Correct.
It's actually false.
In
827 centuries before Marco Polo, Arabs conquered Sicily and brought those noodles. Some noodle dishes still bear Arab names, as a matter of fact.
Which one? It doesn't say.
Google. Google that. All right. Your fourth question, Terry Rotero. The most common symptom of a food allergy is it hives or a rash? Is it fatigue? Is it breathing difficulties or is it heart palpitations?
So it's between the hive and the breathing. So I'm going to go with the breathing.
Breathing difficulty? It's actually fatigue. Fatigue is the most common symptom.
That was none of the one I was thinking. So.
All right, Terry, you've got 2 out of 4 so far correct. And your final question, what butter do professional chefs most often use? Is it salted stick butter? Is it unsalted stick butter? Is it whipped tub salted, or is it most chefs use margarine?
I would go with the unsalted butter.
That's correct. Unsalted stick butter is correct. Terry, that's 3 out of 5. Very nice work. Brittany, would you like to go next?
I would like to go next. I'm a little rusty.
I think you're gonna
we'll
do
see.
Well.
Yeah.
Brittany, which of these is an emulsion? Is it Scotch whiskey, V8 juice, milk, or olive oil?
Which one is an emulsion?
Milk
is correct. That's right. Milk is an emulsion of water and fats made relatively stable through homogenization.
Nice.
All right. Your second question. What's the film that forms on heated milk? A lot of milk questions for you. I shuffled these up.
Yeah,
who
you
knew?
Really did.
Is it fat globules, carbohydrate molecules, coagulated proteins, or lactose?
Let's go with fat globules.
It's actually coagulated
protein. Oh, okay.
That's a tricky one.
Yeah.
Okay, third question. Fining enhances wine clarity. The traditional additive for this purpose is it ground fish protein, whipped egg whites, oak chips, or live bacteria?
Live bacteria.
Nope.
Actually whipped egg whites. So what happens is it sinks to the tank bottom, attracting particles as it goes down.
Interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting. All right. Your fourth question. The spots in English, spotted dog or spotted dick, are flecks of liver, capers, chocolate chips, or currants?
Currants.
That's right. And your final question, Brittany. Fried oysters cooked with eggs and bacon is a what? Do you need some options?
I need some options.
Okay, here we go. Pearl Diver hash, morning after, Hangtown fry, or Boston breakfast?
I'm going to go with Hangtown fry.
That is correct. Very nice. 3 out of 5.
We were
tied.
Tied with Rotero. Tom? Let's see how you do.
All right. Tiebreaker, Tom.
Okay. A wine's legs are A, length of the finish. B, streaks appearing in the glass when the wine is swirled.
We.
Yes! We're not even going to go on. You got it. All right. Your next question. Ottafina is A, sesame pastry, chain of Italian gas stations, Jewish Sabbath brisket, or sparkling wine?
I'm going to go with number one. I haven't a clue.
The sesame pastry, that is incorrect. It's actually the Jewish Sabbath brisket with its origins in Spain.
That's what I get for going to Catholic school.
Yeah, that is what you get. All right, your third question. The old French custom called faire chabreau, is that correct?
Faire chabreau
is A, diluting one's soup with red wine, B, serve broth first, then the meat and vegetables, C, diners skip around the dining table holding hands, or D, whoever gets the bay leaf does the dishes.
B.
It's actually A, diluting one's soup with red wine.
We've had all those questions before, by the way.
Well, apparently we didn't learn the first time around. Okay, the fourth question, Tom. The French term for the person in charge of the cold storage area in a restaurant is boucher, le casse, garmangere, or mise en plat?
Garmangere.
Boucher.
Boucher? I wouldn't have a clue.
Garmangere or boucher, depends on which part of the
garmangere is usually typically the cold.
Right,
the cold, garden manager.
The cold section.
It's the garden manager.
Yeah. Garmangere. It's garmangere.
All right, we're in a playoff.
All right, here we go. Last question, Tom.
Oh, I thought I had...
You get one more.
One more question. Oh, okay.
Okay. This widely used herb may lower blood sugar and increase glucose tolerance as well as lowering blood fat. Is it thyme, sage, coriander, or parsley?
Not a clue. Parsley, sage, rosemary, or thyme.
It was a big old guessing game.
Thyme, sage, coriander, or parsley. So let's do... And blood fat? Is that...
Lowers blood sugar and increases glucose tolerance.
What ethnicity has the lowest blood sugar? Must be the French. I'm going to go with thyme.
That is actually incorrect. It is coriander. Yeah. That makes you, unfortunately, today, Tom, the loser.
I think I called that one.
But what that means is that Brad gets to hang out with you and Brittany and gets to try that.
Make that battle.
It's so delicious. Yeah. He's so lucky.
If you would like to be part of the show and be lucky like Brad, send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen, or you're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by Tina Knoll at Large Media. Our associate producer is the lovely Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre, darn it. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Stitcher, Apple Podcast, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.